Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And something new has happened in the world. I want to talk about something new that's happened in this world. I want to talk about what happened in Brazil. Now, I know many of you out there couldn't be less interested in brutal games like soccer and football and all that other stuff, but something very dramatic happened. You may perceive football as a brutal sport, but the United States, listen in because you're going to learn something about people here. The United States, who has never gotten up this high as it was, I mean, not that I knew anything about it, suddenly were competitors. Suddenly they were involved. And so people who were fans, who don't have much other football to watch, they started watching it, and people started watching it, and then it spread. And something happened with soccer becoming something that the United States, the Americans, got involved in. It's not the whole story. It didn't happen just like that. Even after the United States was eliminated from the competition, the people were already won over. And that's the part of the fascinating thing of what happens to people that turns them to... We're even going to get to what creates the violence. We'll get to that today. But first, let me ask my co-host, Julian Joiello. Julian, you got involved.
Yeah, I actually did. I never usually watch soccer, but this year I got really into it. I saw most of the games, group stages and on, yeah.
Why? How'd you get involved? Because keep in mind, friends, we're not talking about the usual people who watch football, who are usually the old codgers who are laying around, you know, eating a sandwich and watching football, or a group of guys getting together. No, yeah. No.
I actually never really watch sports at all.
Right.
But this is the first kind of time I've actually went out of my way to do it myself because I wanted to. And I noticed that it was because it started with, you know, I saw my friends on, like, Facebook or on Twitter texting me, telling me, oh, the game's going, and I love soccer, whatever. Our team's on. And I would go, and I kind of didn't know what was going on, but they would introduce me to it, and I started seeing everybody talking about it online.
So when you say Facebook and Twitter suddenly take over conversations, there are conversations about football or about, the Europeans call it football, by the way, only we call it soccer.
Yeah, soccer.
Right. But when you see that, being so busy, how many people, I mean, are you talking about a million people now talking about soccer?
I mean, just among my friend group, it was nonstop on my Facebook, but I mean, about numbers of tweets, it broke records, like, you know, more than the Oscars, more than, like, millions and millions and millions of tweets, which are like little status updates from people, so millions about the World Cup from just Americans.
Wow. So, that's funny, huh? How it's getting involved. Now we have the youth involved. As because most of the youth are the tweeters and Facebook, right? We have the older folks who are involved because they're kind of doing their thing. We have men and we have women involved. Funny thing happened. I met three different women, friends of mine, who I asked, did you see the game? I thought they'd say, yeah, me and my husband, we watched the game. They said, yes, I did. They were alone.
Yeah, my friends that introduced me were girls that got me into it, and they love soccer.
But even see these women were not soccer fans, but because of whatever was going on, they got involved to the point where they were watching alone. They'd be watching something for 2.5 hours alone. That's unheard of in sports. Most women never watch a sport alone. So what made this happen, and what's going on? They spoke about it. The young folks, the older folks, the men and women, all got deeply involved. What are the statistics? How many people watch the game?
Okay, so in the U.S., actually, only, the World Cup final, 26 million people tuned in, which is actually almost double of the World Series of Baseball last year, which is amazing. because there's never been that many people watching soccer in America.
And in the whole world, watching soccer, what was a billion?
And in the world, it was actually over a billion.
A billion people.
Over a billion people watching. It was 909 million last year, last World Cup in 2010, and now it's over a billion.
So I guess it's something we should pay attention to.
Yeah, maybe.
Because if everybody wrote on their T-shirt, you know, be nice, it would send a message across. This is all that you're going to hear. You're going to hear one man's opinion, my opinion. This is not about the game of soccer. This is about people. It's what is it that makes people so involved? Not only that, what is it when you have a country like Brazil, where you sit there in the spectators, right? You sit there as spectators, and you're watching your team get decimated, painfully decimated. What is it that happens to you? How do you begin crumbling inside? Now, look, I've been to a lot of football games and baseball games. I've watched my favorite team lose the Super Bowl. I've watched my favorite team lose the Baseball World Series. And I would walk away and go, oh, boy, poor New York Giants. But it was worth a little bit. Certainly none of the violence. Certainly none of the depression. What is it that led these people to be so far involved?
I mean, I know that with me, it was my friends. Just everybody wanted to do it, and I wanted to be part of that group. I wanted to be there and not miss out.
So there's something about the fact that you become part of a bigger group.
Definitely.
Now, do you think, most of you would think, as you watch these players losing, you know, the ones who were being scored on the Brazilian team, you would imagine that people were watching their heroes die. Like they were looking at the people they admire so much.
Actually, we want to give a little background just in case people missed that game. Germany, who won the World Cup, went 7-1 against Brazil in it's a record-breaking game with most scores in the semifinals. So it was heartbreaking for Brazil.
Right, because usually the score is 1-0,
it's 1-0,
and that's the end.
0-0 or 1-1. You know, it's never 7-1.
So what happened was Germany came out and it was just doing perfectly well against these people. But what is it that made the people, the sports people, what fixes so many people in that stadium? What's the psychology of this? Where does it go? So we did a little background check on it. Let's talk about what it is that makes people fans in general. There's three things: the need for status, the need for affiliation, and the need for meaning.
Yeah, I mean, I personally felt like countries, this is your country in the stadium, and people watch their country be destroyed right in front of them. They take it, you know, they look at it and they cry. I mean, you watch the camera zoom in on people and they're crying when they watch the scores goal.
We're going to get to the motive of that, but the need for status. How do you get status by becoming a fan?
I mean, you're the winner. If the U.S. wins against Portugal or they win against whatever country,
you become the champion.
All of a sudden, you're the winner.
Right. Okay, so there's a need for status. That means, in general, and maybe because more so in Europe than in the United States, there's a need for people to elevate their status. There's a need that people feel a little under, and if they could get into a stadium, if they could get into a place where they hear people, where they're with a large group of people, all who become equal now, their status is raised. Even if their seats are all the way up in the back and the other guy's got the seat all the way down in front, it doesn't matter. You're one of the fans. And your status is elevated. So there is a need for status, and there is a need for status that affects most people who become fans. And the more fanatical you could see, and that means just what it sounds like, a fan, You know, it's fanatical. The more fanatical, the more driven you are towards this, the more you have one of these needs. One need is the need for status, meaning the way you are is not good enough. You want to be seen as stronger. Think about a wrestling fan. Why does somebody like wrestling? Because they're associating themselves with this. It's raising their status as power, as strength. Second, the need for affiliation. We all get separated from our families in one way or another, or somehow, you know, our families disagree with us, and our families are not the same families that they used to be. But when you're a fan with a bunch of other fans, it's a perfect family. Perfect. You have 100,000 people waving the same banners, smiling with you every inch of the way.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great feeling. I went down to Stone Street, which is near Bowling Green at the bottom of Manhattan. And there's this cobblestone street with about 10 restaurants, and they all have open tables outside. And so I would go there to watch the game every time with my friend and her friends and our friends. And we'd have a group of 10 among hundreds and hundreds of people outside. And watching the games there was perfect. It was perfect because every close hit on our team was fear stricken across us. And then every time we got close to getting a goal, it was this utter amazing, amazing feeling because you see everybody, not only you, but everybody jumps in this up and throws their table over and they're freaking out because they're so excited for us.
So it's almost like it's happening to you.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to get to. So what happens as the audience is you can be so associated that you could actually feel it happen to you. So the need for affiliation is the need for family. The need for belonging to a team, wearing a team jacket. Why does somebody wear a jacket that says New York Giants? He wants other New York Giants to see it and wave at him. You know, he doesn't want somebody who's a different team to look at him. He's not there to create enemies. But he's showing, I'm part of this family. The need for affiliation. And third, the need for meaning. How does the need for meaning play into this? Because your life is empty. Your life isn't, what are you doing for a living? You know, what are you doing with your time? We are married, you got kids, you're nothing. You know, meaning, and finding some way to be important. And here you become important by becoming associated with winners, hopefully. So three factors that I think affect people to create this kind of belief and strong strength is the need for status, the need for affiliation, and the need for meaning, those three. But then there's another thing. In almost every culture, you could find a certain amount of repression of certain things, passion and anger. They talk about the South Americans as being very passionate people, you know, meaning sexy. Meaning they're very passionate, they're romantic, they're sexy, it's all about that on one level. On another level, they inhibit their responses if they feel angry, but they really can let it fly. So what you see is a passion and anger release. You see the release of passion and the release of anger. Now, when I say the release of anger, when something happens and they get angry at the other team from a foul, they get angry at the other team because of something that happens, they really feel this anger. So now here you have a vehicle where you can feel both passion, joy, and anger. All right, how does that lead us? Where does that take us? Because this is Armand DeMille. I'm not just going to talk about football. Where it takes you to is the question, what's going on? Why really? Okay, we have all of these incidents because is it the person is feeling bad about the player who doesn't get the kick? Or does the person actually experience it? If you look at a lot of the fans, they're wearing the colors, the banners, some of them have their faces painted of the very team. It's almost like they were the player and they were up in the stands and they're the player down on the field. It's almost like you could exchange places. So when they were decimated, when they were beaten, it wasn't the team that was beaten, it was you that were beaten, you the fan. And little by little, especially with that consistent goals against it when Brazil got it. It was like being punched in the stomach and punched in the stomach, but it's like it was happening to you. Not that it was just happening on the field. You felt worse. Many fans felt worse than the players did. I mean, I'm sure the players felt bad, but they had to get up and keep playing, and they understand this is soccer. This happens. But for many players, it was devastation. When you get that kind of devastation, you're saying there's an identification with the fans. Now, let me take a segue here for a moment to talk about narcissism. Narcissism is the identification, right? A person's identification with an image of themselves that is not necessarily them. So in other words, we all have this when we grow up, we learn what's good and what's not good. And we try to behave in a way that kind of is acceptable to those around us. The narcissistic self is the image that we create so that we could get love from our parents. You develop a narcissistic self, and you, by developing it more and more, you lose track of your original self. So many of you are admirable people, and you're admired, and you have tricks, and you have ways of getting people to like you. It's your narcissistic self. Your narcissistic self is a part of you as a fan. Part of your narcissism is to be one of that team, to be one of these players, to feel like one of these players. Back to psychology, what happens in psychology, what we therapists know, is that the worst thing that could happen to most humans is called a narcissistic wound. You ever hear of a narcissistic wound?
I've heard the term.
Yeah, let me bring it to you. A narcissistic wound is when your very image of yourself, such as I'm a lovable person, gets cracked. I'll give you an example. I had a friend who was deeply in love with this woman, and they were spending all their time together, and they were deeply in love, and she was a dancer, and she went off to South America. And when she was in South America, she met her old teacher. The two of them took up with each other, and they took off, and they left my friend just where he was. This is a friend, Richie, who I knew ever since childhood. Richie, instead, couldn't take it, because Richie's image of himself was, I'm a good guy. How can this possibly happen? I'm sure many of you out there have asked yourself that question often enough. I'm a good guy. I didn't do anything wrong. How can this happen to me? But if the what happens to you cracks your belief in yourself, if it says, well, maybe you're not such a good guy, maybe you're not so beautiful, maybe she didn't love you, then what happens is not only your narcissistic self cracks, but it exposes all the pain that was being hidden behind this belief system. Does that make sense to you, Julian?
Yes, it does, actually. I apply it directly in my mind now to acting a lot of
acting
the time.
Acting a lot, yes.
So, like, if I go in, I feel like I'm really getting good at acting and becoming more, of a better performer, and then I'll go in and I'll not get a job. And to me, I'll take that as turns out I've been lying to myself this whole time.
If it goes deeply, right?
If it goes deeply, yeah.
But you still recover and you still go through it. There are many people who you'll see who could bet everything on it, on this one job. You know, this is the one thing. If
right.
I get rejected,
I mean,
now,
I learned not to do that
because
I know how painful it is. Yeah.
Right. If I don't handle it, then I'm no good. If I don't get this job, if I don't get online, I'm no good. So what happens with a narcissistic wound is it cracks the ego, smashes it, breaks it down. And this has happened to many of you. A woman comes home and finds her husband cheating. Narcissistic wound. She thought they had a love relationship. She thought he cared about her. She thought they had a very perfect friendship relationship. And suddenly it's all shattered. Now, the reason I say the most frequent business we get is many people who come to us for help, for therapy, are usually people who lost a near relationship. And if you dig into it, you'll find out that a relationship was lost due to a narcissistic wound, something they believed was not true. So when there's a narcissistic wound, you're beginning to crack apart. It's like you're encased in glass. And there's a little bit of niche. There's a little bit of crack. And it's going to happen again and again and again. And you're going to start cracking open. And you need to do something to try to pull yourself together. One of the ways that people pull themselves together is they reject the whole thing and they become violent. You've heard enough about violence in the soccer stands, violence in Argentina after this last loss. That was your defense. That was the defense, because what they weren't just fighting for a country. They weren't fighting for a soccer team. They were fighting to keep themselves alive because they had no meaning at all. So very often when we see people who are overly involved in sports, we can say, you know, that person's putting too much of themselves in it, but you have to be careful because they cannot suffer too easily a narcissistic wound. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. 212-957-2729. There are three pieces that count for most people in Europe, because it's been going on a long time, right? Soccer's been going on there long, long, long before. It's just everybody. And it is nationalism. You get a chance to feel associated with a country. So you get this nationalism and this pride about your country. How is it religion, Julian?
I feel like for example, for Brazil, it's like people lose faith in religion or other things like this, and then they look at their soccer team and they see these people possibly bringing them some kind of salvation.
I
felt like it is like a religion to them. They watch it, they follow every player. These players become like saints. It's like a team of saints to them. And they, you know, for example, the German player, he's 22 years old. I forget his name, Gertz, I think, who got the goal at the end of the world final just 2 days ago. He is going to become a saint to Germany forever. I mean, that's going to live on forever in all of Germany. Because of how important it is, and it becomes like a religion, it becomes history, it becomes this salvation, I think.
I heard there was a man who kicked a goal into his own goal. He kicked a ball into his own goal, and it followed him for the rest of his life. He couldn't get away.
There was actually, I think it was on the Colombian team. He was killed, actually.
Oh, that's another one. Killed.
He was the man kicked the ball into his own goal, and he was killed by I guess fans or. I don't know, but I remember hearing about that. And whatever happened, maybe it was suicide, but I know he was killed. Yeah.
212-957-2729. So
pretty dark.
Do players become godly? You know, do they become, or do these, what we're saying, do they become part of the religion? Is it part of it? Now, let's look at this idea of mob mentality. I've been part of mob mentality. I have done peace marches, protests. That's mob mentality. Me and a group of people screaming, no, hell no, I won't go, you know, or we're yelling out, burn your draft card, or we're fighting against people with guns. There's something wonderful about being part of a mob. Have you ever been part of a mob?
Maybe slightly. I mean, I guess probably one of the times it's happened is just now in the World Cup. I mean, at times there was cheering, and I have friends that would go insane. If the U.S. scored, they would jump up, just convulse. and I kind of started joining them in that because I wanted to feel what they were doing.
So what people get, what I get, my friends, is when you see this, and what we saw was a major event. Brazil didn't lose face. The people who were invested in having a different face for themselves, the narcissistic image, got crushed. It got hurt a lot. And it's kind of funny because in the place where carnival is so important, you know, in Brazil, where you could have so much people dressing up and looking beautiful and trying to dance through the streets in carnival, I can't imagine how they do it following this. I don't know if they do recover, you know. 212-957-2729. In just a few minutes, we'll take those calls. So this is just one man's opinion. Don't think about the game of soccer as just a game. It's sweeping. It's going to be huge. It's going to be gigantic. And personally, I find it a little boring. You know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and then finally one score. But I know there are nuances. There are parts of it that are really admirable, you know, that you can see. But it's going to be big. And part of this is this viral nature. You know, part of what we saw is Facebook. You know, our president got elected because of the internet, right?
Yeah, I mean, Obama's one of the first presidents ever to even use the internet for campaigning. And he's got petitions and all sorts of things through the internet that helped him get elected and get his word out.
Yeah, so that's happening. And again, even here with the internet, we have soccer. It's going to be part of that, it's part of the modern world. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We got time for one quick call. Hi, Milton. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, how are you, sir? I'm listening to the radio station, and I was very interested on the narcissistic wound that you were talking about with the gentleman on the radio station.
Yep.
It's not pretty much myself. I'm in a relationship, and my wife and her mother don't get along. And out of the 27 years that I've been with my wife, I'm looking at something of what you were talking about, a person that believes in themselves so much that it's like, for instance, she seems...
Who's she, your wife or your mother-in-law?
My mother-in-law.
Okay.
My mother-in-law, she seems to think that she does no evil or no good to people when she actually does cause a lot of grief.
So she's built her life about being right, around this idea of being right, and she's the right one, right?
Yeah.
And she doesn't know it by trying to teach people, show people, shove it down their throat. She's hurting a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so the big threat is what happens when she tries to shut that off? What happens when she realizes that it hasn't done any good? She can't afford to realize that. Because she's protecting herself from becoming a Brazilian.
Actually, she's Italian.
Right.
She's actually alienated pretty much everybody in her family.
Really?
And pushes everybody away because of the act that she plays. She portrays herself as not doing anything wrong.
Hey, Milton, do you like her?
I like her.
I hear that.
I don't like what she's done.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like her methods. I respect her because my mom brought me up to respect people. If people don't like me, that's their issue.
But I'm going to ask you this. I sense that you like her as well as you're angry at her. Angry with her. You know, I sense both. Is there anything kind you could do for her that would not take much verbal recognition? Like if you remember a particular flower she liked or some food she liked, that you would bring her something, you know, that she might not normally, just something in passing. Is there something gentle that you could do for her? Because this is a woman who's like a porcupine. You know, everything that she touches gets, you know, pricked in some way. It gets hurt in some way. Anybody who comes near her. And sometimes these people just need someone to be gentle with them, if possible. And I know it's hard.
No, for me, that's not a problem. I'm a giving person. I can forgive. There are limitations. No, I won't say limitations. There is a line that I would not go. I've known her. She's in her 80s now, so I expect certain things not to fire upstairs. But what I feel is that when you hurt somebody indirectly, not me, but my wife and my family, it doesn't feel good.
I understand. It makes you angry and it makes you sad. Listen, I have to be going because I have a. We have to take a short break.
Sure.
Milton, we can continue if you call us back a little later.
Absolutely. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here in WBAI. We're going to take a short break, bring you some Benny Goodman just to get things going.
Now, with the addition of Lionel Hampton at the vibraphones, we play Avalon. Take it, Lionel.
Goodman, Lionel Hampton, the big band, Avalon. Avalon's such an interesting song to play. You'll see a lot of different artists like to play it, especially in big band style, because it has such beautiful changes inside of it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. My first half hour, I wanted to bring you my opinion about my observations and what I see happening with a new sport called soccer. New meaning new to the United States, embracing it. How many Americans watched the soccer game?
It was 26 million at the final.
26 million?
26 million.
At the final, even though the United States wasn't involved?
Yeah, it was Germany versus Argentina, and we had 26 million people watching.
26 million people watching. How did we get to that? Of course, it was the Twitter, it was Facebook. We're going to move on to another subject, but let's take this next caller. Hold on one second. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hey, how you doing, Armand?
Good, Ed.
I just wanted to... I got to disagree with you a little bit about Brazil and soccer and how it's looked at in that country. I was overseas. I was in the military for about 4 years. I was overseas. I did a little time in South America, and I did a little time in Europe. And the way that the Brazilian community looks at soccer, a lot of those players come from the poorest of the poorest parts of the community. And there's a large problem with poverty and homelessness, especially among the youth in Brazil. And when some of these guys make it to the pinnacle of the soccer world with their physical abilities, a lot of people look at these guys as the way out. And it becomes more so a religion. So when they were defeated by 7 goals, that's like a Super Bowl where one team makes 53 points and another team makes nothing.
No, it's worse than that. It's worse than that.
A lot of people took that.
I've had my team's
heart, but actually it destroyed their perception of what making it is.
Well, Ed, you said something very important. Because of the ability to come out of poverty and get to a place where you're above your poverty level, the same thing that I said before, people connect to that player. People say, I feel like this person has brought me up and brought everybody up. But when they get beaten, when they took that that annihilation, they got beaten down to poverty again.
Yeah, well, that's
and
that's
everybody
exactly.
felt like you took all my money away.
Exactly. Well, a lot of people, they identify and connect with some of these athletes. They feel that they can do it too. And to be beaten, that humiliating defeat. I mean, there's a lot of those guys probably won't even play soccer.
Well, Ed, let me ask you something. In your life, have you ever had this experience where you've been beaten so badly that you couldn't recover?
Yeah, a couple of times, man.
I thought so. Tell me about it. Tell me about it.
Well, I had a problem with substance abuse when I was younger, and I was homeless for a period of time. I lived on the street, rode the A-train up and down. And it's demoralizing when you get to that point to where, you know, one time I was so hungry, I saw a half-eaten hamburger on the ground. And, you know, I picked it up because my stomach felt like it was wrapped around my spine. And to think about that, to have to do that, that was my lowest point, what they call my, you know, your lowest ebb. When you're in recovery, they have, like, when you're rock bottom, that was my rock bottom. And once I experienced that, that's when I had to take a hard
look. You knew you were really beaten. You know, you felt all the way down.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about another time when you've been badly beaten?
Relationships. I had a 10-year relationship with one woman, and like you were saying, you know, you think it's one thing, and it's not really that. And when you realize that it's not really that, that hurts a lot.
That hurts a lot. That's the same kind of feeling. Geez, I thought I was okay.
Yeah.
You know, and thank you for going in there. Just let me ask you one more. When you were a kid, when you were real little in your family, did you ever get the feeling that you were overwhelmed by the lack of love that was there?
Oh, no, I mean, my family, well, my grandmother displayed a lot of affection.
Right.
But my father and my mother, they were more people of action, not people of, I'm like that myself. Me and my wife just got into that. I won't tell you that I love her. Well, she's the person that needs that. We just had a big discussion about that over the weekend. She's a person that needs to hear that needs that affection. I'm not a person that needs that, you know. I mean, I'll look at your actions, you know. She always asks me, you don't tell me you love me. I say, well, I'm here. If I didn't love you, I wouldn't be here. And it's hard for me to understand someone who needs that, probably because of the way I was raised, more than likely, probably because I didn't get a lot of it other than my grandmother, from my immediate family. You know, your actions show what you need.
So what you're saying is when you were a kid, you wanted to hear the words, I love you, from your mother and father, but you couldn't get it. So you had to turn off the need. You said, no, I'm not going to need that.
Well, I guess, yeah, I mean, that's one way.
Yeah, and then when your wife comes to you and says, I have that need, you say, oh, no, I couldn't have that need when I was little. I don't want you to have that need now.
I mean, not so much that I don't want her to have the need. I just don't understand it.
And whether you understand it or not, if she said to you, Ed, do me a favor when you come into the house or when you come into the bedroom, would you mind taking your shoes off? You'd say, oh, it's okay, honey, I'll take my shoes off, right? Or if she said something, if she said, look, and use a different shampoo because I don't like the way that smells in bed.
Yeah,
that's easy enough, right? Whether you understand it or not, you like the way your shampoo smells.
Yeah, well, I mean, I say it to her, but she doesn't think it's a sincere.
What is her name?
Huh?
What's her name?
Kim.
Kim. Okay, now if Kim could hear it right this minute, if she could replay the program, if she could replay this from the archives, and you were to give her a sincere, I love you, could you do that now?
Yeah, I could say it now. I mean, like I said, we had a
like
big...
say it to, wait, don't describe it anymore. I want you to say it to her directly through the airwaves, using her name, and say it gently.
Tim, I love you.
Good. Hang there. Well, don't say another word. Don't say another word. Ed, you're beautiful. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, have a good day.
Thank you. 212-957-2729. You know, we learn things in early life that we learn to keep away from us. Let's talk about the sensitivity to rejection. It's a big word. According to the dictionary, rejection is a word that means the refusal to accept or discard as worthless. Rejection. How do you deal with rejection in your life? If you're in the arts, you have to learn to live with it, because dealing with rejection is a part of the arts. Like Julian says, every time he goes out there, he's got to deal with this sense of rejection. You are part of a creative process, and you know that you'll be liked by some people and not appreciated by others. If you don't get that fact, and if instead you get angry at somebody who does not appreciate your work, you can't. You're lost. Did you ever hear people, Julian, who get angry at the people who are giving them trials?
Oh, yeah. I mean, among all the acting students that I was in school with for 4 years, it's all they talk about is complaining about how these people didn't see this thing in them or didn't realize that they were right for this role and they picked somebody else who wasn't. And a lot of anger.
Do you think, Julian, that you could determine success potential based on how a person handles the rejection? Because I think you can.
I think so too. The people that I know that are the most successful right now are the people that dealt with that the best. I mean, to the point, not only the best, but they didn't have a problem with it. They would get rejected and then move on to the next thing.
So we're going to have to talk a lot more about that. We got to talk about rejection and what rejection means. Maybe I'll continue this tomorrow, this discussion, because it's a learning to deal with rejection in your life is very important. Maybe we can give you some information to help you out with this. I'm gonna be willing to bet that Yousef is calling in.
Yeah, hi, Elmo.
Hey, Yousef, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Good, good, good. Nice to hear your voice.
A good programming. I didn't get to tune in at the beginning, but just came in when the guy. Before you went to the break. So I'm not really sure the topic you're talking about today, but I hope you can ask me many questions like you asked the other gentleman. Before that, you just spoke about rejection.
Yousef, so you're saying to me, you know, Armand, I don't really know what I'm calling in about, but I would love to talk to you, and I would love you to do some inquiry into me, Yousef, you know, what it is. Now, so Yousef, what is it about you that people find very difficult to deal with? Do you have a relationship with anybody? You have a wife?
I have a wife with, 3 kids, yes.
Okay, and what is your wife not like about you?
That is so... to be honest with you, I'm not areas a lot, but they're really minor things, like procrastinating. Like I said, I have 3 kids. The first one is 10 years old, but and at the same time, I'm a student, engineering student in my third year. I drive taxi full time, but so I have too much my plate. So usually there's some stuff that I had to do that I don't get to do to the last minute. And that's the only thing most of the time that's what my wife will complain about. To be honest with you, my wife doesn't complain that much. Even though I'm wrong, this lady will not complain.
So how do you feel about it? How do you feel about her not complaining, even though you're wrong?
Accuse her. Like, let's say I didn't do something, something that did happen, something did go wrong. I would say, why didn't you press me? Or why didn't you tell me to do this? Why didn't you remind me? Because you know I have too much to do and I can just forget to do this. She would say, I can say the same thing. But But the funny thing about my wife is, there's a lot of things that I do. Like, she don't claim that she knows me. I say she doesn't know me. But to be honest, I feel like she knows me better than I know more than I know myself.
Yeah, that's when, what it
when
sounds
I do
like.
Things, she say,
so
Yusuf.
Let me ask you something. What's your wife's name?
Her name is Sophia.
Sophia, what a nice name.
Yes,
okay, Yusuf and Sophia. Can you imagine that? Hey, here come Yusuf and Sophia. So if you could tell Sophia right now that you were grateful to her for putting up with all your hogwash all these years and your stress, okay, if you could convey that to her right now on the air, would you do that right this minute?
Yes, I would do that. But I mean, before I do that, I would say something, though. When it comes to our relationship, we all content. We are content. Like, she know I love her. And I know she loves me, and actually I have to say something though. I used to claim that I don't know what love is. Like, I don't have that feeling, but I see love through action. Like, whatever this lady does, which is for me in my case, I always appreciate it, and I always tell her, you know, I love you. And when I say you the best woman, she will tell me you the best man. Like, she will see that I'm the best more than she is. So, Sophia, if you're listening to me right now, this is Yusuf telling you that I love you so much, and I do appreciate what you do, what you've been doing for me, my kid, and my entire family. And I do love you.
Beautiful, Yusuf. Beautifully said. Thank you very much. So, this is Armand DeMille. Thank you very much, Yusuf. 957-2729, 212-957-2729. 957-2729. I had the wrong switch turned on there, Julian. Well, the word rejection's gotten to be important in our lives. Don't you think that rejection is a bad thing? Do you ever hear the word rejection used in a positive sentence? I'm sure it can be. How can you use rejection in a positive way? Now, it's a word that automatically sounds wrong. And like I said, we're going to pick up much more on that. We have somebody on the phone. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mr. Armando.
Fitzroy.
I have been hearing from. I've been hearing you for many, 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 many years.
Yes, I recognize your name. Didn't you call in once before?
Not today, not now. I haven't spoken to you.
Never, ever, ever, ever.
Never, ever spoken to you.
Okay. Well, and your name is Fitzroy, right?
Yes, I am.
Yes, okay. So thanks for calling in. What made you call in today of all days?
I just hoping that you can help me to find my way out of the darkness that I found myself into.
Oh, what hole did you pull yourself into? Tell me about the hole of darkness.
Well, I don't know. I think I have given my best throughout my life to people who have I come into contact with. But I don't think that people are, they seem to be receptive of it. But I'm in doubt as to how much they appreciate what I have been doing for.
Fitzroy, you sound lonely.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
See, that's why you are the man I need to talk to, because right there and there, you don't even have to ask a question. You could just see it right, hanging out right there, like a sign
was right
hanging
out. Yeah. Yes, you're lonely. Have you been lonely most of your life?
Yes, I have.
And are you somebody who likes to organize things, or are you somebody who likes to have things spread all around?
I'm not that organized, but you know, for most part of it, I do a little bit of organization, yes.
When you've helped people out in your life, like your family, when you help them out, how do you help them out? Do you do things for them? Do you lend them a hand? What do you do?
I lend a hand. I give things whatever way it's possible. I seem like it's a little bit difficult for me to say no in most cases.
Yes, hard for you to say no. So people will take from you. So you give. You give, you give, you give, and you're hoping to get back. You give with the hope that you will eventually be loved back. But it doesn't happen.
It doesn't.
So do you ever, Fitzroy, do you ever get angry?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah, I can imagine when you get angry, you could really blow up.
That is so true.
When's the last time that happened to you?
I would say just, I think it was Saturday.
Saturday. And what was the incident over which it made you blow up? What happened?
My wife called me and said something to me about a dirty dish that I left in the sink.
And she nagged you about the dirty dish?
That I left in the sink, which, you know, I am a clean person. I normally clean up behind me. So I felt as if it was unnecessary for her to call me to even mention such a thing to me.
Right, it hurt you. It hurt you because what you wanted to get from her, what did you want her to say to you, Fitzroy, when she got on the phone? What would you have preferred? How would you like, hey, honey, how are you, sweetheart? I was just calling you because I missed you.
Well, that would have been much, much appreciative had I heard something like that, yes.
Yeah. Has she ever said that to you?
I think I have heard it from her maybe one or twice that, you know, I love you, but not in a sense. I guess after a confrontation.
Yeah. And Fitzroy, did you get it from your family as well? Did your family ever give you direct love as well?
No.
So it's somebody, you're not somebody who expects to be loved. You'd like to be loved, but you don't expect it. And how come your family didn't show you that kind of affection? Were they too busy for you?
Well, I didn't grow with mommy and daddy, for one.
Yeah.
I've experienced a little of true love through my great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of it is... at one point in my life, I got really frustrated in my early teen. Because in the culture that I grew up in, it's disrespectful to be disrespecting elders.
Right.
And I was doing that.
And what did you get fed up? What did you do when you got fed up? How did you behave?
I annoyed them. I called them names and frustrate them.
Mm-hmm.
So they will curse at me, and so and to me it was fun. It's like the frog that says, what is dope to you is dead to me. So to me it was fun.
So it says to me, Fitzroy, that you are filled with a lot of resentment over not being appreciated, not only now, not only through this incident today, not only last week, not only then, but throughout your life.
Yes.
And your claim to life is, I wish somebody would appreciate me for who I am.
That would have been wonderful.
Well, it's, you know, Fitzroy, let me say something to you. I really appreciate you for who you are right now.
Thank you, Amanda. Coming from you, it means a whole lot.
A lot of respect I have for you, Fitzroy. Thanks a lot. Stay in here.
Thank you.
You know, we've got to be going, my friends. Beautiful people, huh? We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. We'll talk about the sensitivity to rejection. We'll go just a little further with that. This is Armand DeMille. If you want to get in contact with me, you can go to my website, thepositivemind.com, at which place you can hear replays of this program and other archives. ¶¶